And now it's time for On Our Minds. Karen Joy Fowler just had a big week. She won the Penn Faulkner Award for her novel, We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves. It's a story of family secrets, memory, guilt, and animal intelligence. Here's a passage from early in the novel as the narrator Rosemary reflects on a childhood trauma.
As part of leaving Bloomington for college and my brand new start, I'd made a careful decision to never, ever tell anyone about my sister Fern. Though I was only 5 when she disappeared from my life, I do remember her. Her smell and touch, scattered images of her face, her ears, her chin, her eyes. But I don't remember her fully, not the way Lowell does. I would think better of myself now if, like Lowell, I'd been angry about Fern's disappearance. But it seemed too dangerous just then to be mad at our parents, and I was frightened instead. There was also a part of me relieved, and powerfully, shamefully so, to be the one kept and not the one given away.
The central mystery in this novel is what happened to Rosemary's sister, Fern. Why did her parents give Fern away? There's a secret that's pivotal to the story, but you'll have to listen to Steve Paulson's interview with Karen Joy Fowler to discover it.
Karen, early on in your novel, we learn that there are these two sisters, Rosemary and Fern, of the same age. How would you describe the two of them?
They are, in the beginning of the book, described very much as twins, although they are not, in fact, exactly the same ages. They are very close in age.
Mm-hmm. And what are their differences in personality?
Fern is the sister who was given away, is much more flamboyant, much more outgoing, much more filled with joie de vivre.
And more physically capable, too.
Much more physically capable. And Rosemary is sort of the chronicler, the person narrating their lives.
So Rosemary is the big talker.
Rosemary,
in fact, she's a nonstop talker.
She is a nonstop talker, yes.
And is sort of trying to explain Fern to the rest of the world, because Fern does not talk at all.
That's exactly right. And because Fern has so many other qualities in which Rosemary is deficient, Rosemary really has settled on the talking as the thing that she does, the one thing that she does better than Fern.
Now, at this point in our interview, I think we need to reveal a certain secret, which you do not reveal in your novel until about a third of the way into it, and that is that Fern, the sister, is a chimpanzee. And it is ingenious what you've
done.
Thank you. Because, you know, once we attach the label chimp onto Fern, we're going to think about her in a totally different way, and we don't know that for the first, 80 or 90 pages
of
the novel.
Well, of course, it was my intention that you meet Fern and think of her as a sister, which is the way Rosemary thinks of her first, and learn that she is a chimp only later for exactly the reason that you just said, that if I start off telling you she's a chimp, you are picturing the family in quite a different way.
So the conceit of the story is that this family, and the parents are scientists, the father is a psychologist at Indiana University in Bloomington, wants to raise a chimp as a human, basically a chimp of the same age as one of his own children. And this is based on an actual historical experiment, right?
It is, yes. Quite a famous experiment, also conducted at Indiana University by a psychologist named Winthrop Kellogg. Of course, I have fictionalized everything. Winthrop Kellogg's experiment took place in the 1930s. The experiment in my book takes place in the 1970s. The Kellogg experiment lasted 19 months. My experiment goes on for 5 years.
So what happened in that early experiment from the 1930s? What happened to the Kellogg family?
The experiment came to a pretty abrupt end. You know, as it was conceived, it was all about how human the chimp might be if the chimp were raised exactly the way you would raise a child. You know, what behaviors might the chimp have? What capabilities might the chimp have? What appears to have been completely unanticipated is that having a chimp sibling of a similar age affected the behaviors of the human child. And the human child was actually very quick to take on chimp behaviors. And he began food hooting when his breakfast was put in front of him. And then the morning he did that, Mrs. Kellogg said to her husband, that's the end of this experiment.
They didn't want him to become monkey boy.
They did not. That was not the plan at all.
One of the issues in your book is, as Fern, the chimp, becomes an adolescent. I mean, chimps are very powerful creatures.
They
sort of cannot be contained within a human household. And so then there's the real question of, do they pose a danger to the humans, including in this case to Rosemary, the young human girl?
Yes, if you could imagine, you know, what it would be like to have a three-year-old with superpowers. I believe there have been movies written about this, you know. The landscape would be nothing but smoking devastation if a three-year-old actually had the power to do whatever came into his or her head at the moment.
Sort of like the id runs wild.
Exactly.
And, you know, in a chimp, a three-year-old chimp is physically very powerful. I mean, stronger than any human.
Yes. Well, it's really about age five where it becomes a problem. As the chimp moves into adolescence, all of these issues get much more difficult. The chimp gets much, much stronger, smarter. You know, I'm sure most everybody listening will know something about some of the horrific chimp attacks of the last few years.
So. Well, there was the one case where a woman had lived with a chimp for years.
Yes.
And seemed to have lived very well with the chimp. And then suddenly the chimp turned on her and mauled her.
Chimp actually turned on a friend who came to visit. Yeah, and it was just a devastatingly tragic event that illustrates yet again why chimps are not to be kept in the house.
Much of the story is Rosemary, your narrator, is reflecting back on what happened. And she can't exactly remember all the details of when she was five, when Fern was removed from the household. But various glimpses of this past life come back to her. And I'd love to have you read a passage where she reflects on some of the differences between Fern, her chimpanzee sister, and herself. Could you go ahead and
I would love this? To. Thank you. I always used to believe I knew what Fern was thinking. Fern wants to go outside. Fern wants to watch Sesame Street. Fern thinks you are a doo-doo head. Some of this was convenient projection. But you'll never convince me of the rest. Why wouldn't I have understood her? No one knew Fern better than I. I knew every twitch. I was attuned to her. Why does she have to learn our language? Lowell asked my father once. Why can't we learn hers? Dad's answer was that we still didn't know for sure that Fern was even capable of learning a language, but we did know for sure that she didn't have one of her own. Dad said that Lowell was confusing language with communication when they were two very different things. Language is more than just words, he said. Language is also the order of words and the way one word inflects another. I am the daughter of a psychologist. I know that the thing ostensibly being studied is rarely the thing being studied. So what was the goal of the Fern-Rosemary, Rosemary-Fern study, before it came to its premature and calamitous end? I'm still not sure. But it seems to me that much of the interesting data is mine. So I think instead of studying how well Fern could communicate, our father might have been studying how well Fern could communicate with me. Here is the question our father claimed to be asking. Can Fern learn to speak to humans? Here is the question our father refused to admit he was asking. Can Rosemary learn to speak to chimpanzees?
That's a wonderful passage and
so
suggestive. I mean, you're really raising some profound questions here because perhaps we've never really studied chimpanzees the right way. I mean, trying to measure their intelligence by language studies, because of course they don't have language as we do. So what changes if we really try to watch how chimps communicate with each other? I mean, what worlds open up then?
You know, worlds in which we acknowledge and recognize a kind of intelligence that does not resemble human intelligence. When I started the book, I was interested in chimps because their kind of intelligence is so similar to ours. And, you know, it was really only in the process of writing the book that I started to ask myself, what's so important about that? You know, why is an intelligence that is more alien to us not equally valid and equally interesting?
Can you speculate at all on what kind of intelligence chimpanzees might have? And I recognize you're a novelist, not a primatologist.
Thank you.
Where does that lead you?
I think a lot of the questions revolve around a sort of theory of mind. To what extent can you anticipate the mind of the person that you're dealing with or the chimp that you're dealing with? Whether chimps have episodic memory and, you know, the extent to which memory also depends on language is another question.
Is the larger question here what it means to be human?
Absolutely. That is absolutely the larger question.
You know, and where do you draw the line between humans and chimpanzees? Or, you know, you could talk about other animals as well.
Yes.
So where do you draw that line?
I am not sure there is a line. It's a dotted line at best. I put that in the category of many, many questions about the world that I cannot answer. And as a writer, the only questions I'm really interested in are the questions that I cannot answer. I reassure myself that the fact that the world is bigger and more bizarre and stranger than I will ever be able to comprehend is a good thing. And I leave it at that.
Do you think science will ever be able to answer this question?
I do not. And if in some ways the topic of a novel is always what it is like to be human, what it means to be human, then perhaps the place to look is at non-humans to try to see what's the same and what's different.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed this.
Karen Joy Fowler talking with Steve Paulson about her novel We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves, which just won the Penn Faulkner Award for Best Fiction. If you'd like to hear their complete unedited conversation, you'll find it on our website at ttbook.org.